healthy. Radio addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Times of crisis.
Pro-Russian separatists stealing evidence and even bodies from the wreckage of the shot-down plane, MH17. An emergency vote expected to demand international access to the site as new evidence points to Russia being responsible.
Team Obama responds.
Hello, everybody. I'm not gonna hold up the meal. Everybody, sit down. First of all, we have a lot of state dinners around here.
We do.
They're not always as cheerful and fun as this. First of all, everybody's older and a little stodgier, but this is a much hipper crowd. More colorful outfits.
Well, he sounds like he's really engaged in the crisis now. We have multiple crises going on at one time. We got the Middle East with Hamas and Israel. We have the Russian shoot down of a passenger plane over the Ukraine. We have the ongoing manufactured crisis at our southwest border. And we have the most disengaged, aloof, out of touch president that I couldn't write this in Obama Diaries Part 2. I mean, this sounds like it's coming out of the pages of the Obama Diaries. My book that came out, what, 3 years ago now? 4 years ago? At the time, people thought, this would never happen. The president wouldn't be doing all these fundraisers in times of crises. He wouldn't be talking to the kids' state dinner when we had all of these major issues happening in the country.
Maybe I shouldn't say this, but it's not like our family, including me, don't have, you know, some snacks once in a while that that may not be, you know, on the perfect nutrition chart.
Oh, they were talking about what their weaknesses were. Oh, the entire Obama family. Okay, so, well, I think we can list his weaknesses, right? What are his fast food, what are his junk food weaknesses?
My big thing, chips and guacamole. like basically, if there's a bowl of good chips and guacamole.
He loses it.
I lose my mind. The first lady, French fries.
But I'm going to say this. I'm making a vow. I'm going to take a break from...
yeah, for 12
really?
Hours.
Wow. That's big.
Oh, bull. Oh, no. This. First of all, Julia sends me this. You know, I'm away for 6 days. Half of them rained, but we had a great time. Wait for 6 days, and Julia sends me this video. And I assume that the video's the date is not, you know, a current date. I assume that this happened a year ago or 2 years ago because there's not time stamped, right? We don't. And so I'm looking, I say, she has to be wrong about this. There's no way he went on with this goofy kid state dinner when all of this stuff was happening, right? I mean, it wasn't happening during the crisis. It happened after the plane was shot down.
The White House talking about not unduly alarming people. Isn't there an argument that some might be alarmed that he's not publicly commenting as sort of the leader of the world community on what is an escalating but already very big crisis?
I lose my mind.
I lose it. Yeah, well, he loses it when Mika Brzezinski is even thinking this whole thing is ridiculous. You are listening to your healthy radio addiction, The Laura Ingraham Show, 855-40-LAURA. The president of the United States has his White House team respond to the charges that he's disconnected from multiple crises. And what was said as justification was that people would get unduly alarmed. They were worried that people would not get unduly alarmed.
According to the New York Times, President Obama has no plans to cancel a three-day fundraising trip this week. Despite the crisis in Ukraine and the Middle East, the White House says abrupt changes in the presidential schedule could, quote, unduly alarm the American people.
Okay. What might unduly alarm the American people is that the American people see their country and its supremacy, its economy, its foreign policy, its culture, its rule of law, its sovereignty, its very identity slip away. This is what is concerning the American people. It is not the fact that you would cancel a fundraiser. This White House still, however, has people in the media who are reporting on this in kind of a, on the one hand, on the other hand, fashion. This was, by the way, after the New York Times finally wrote a piece over the weekend, sticking to his travel plans, comma, at risk of looking bad. Michael Shear of the New York Times. Obama maintains schedule despite world crises. Well, the schedule is the kids' state dinner. The kids' state dinner and fundraisers and
golfing.
What's
been the best part so far? This? All right. I didn't cue them on that one.
Peter Baker was on Morning Joe this morning. And Peter Baker, the New York Times, you know, he's a top writer, front pager for the New York Times. Now, just before we play the soundbite, imagine if Bush, the day an airliner is shot down, and we know it's Russian-backed, we know the Russians have, the Russian government, that is the rebel stronghold, okay? The Russian government and the rebels, there's no difference. I told you this the moment we heard about the incursions into the Ukraine, the pro-Russian separatists, that is the Russian government paying these people. We knew this all along. We knew this all along. But imagine if Bush was seen with his, Barney going to a dog training class with Barney before he headed out mountain biking and then did a fundraiser for, some Texas senatorial candidate. Did all three things in one day during a border crisis, a humanitarian crisis there, foreign policy crisis in the Middle East, and the airliner shot down. Imagine what the New York Times would come on Morning Joe and say. Would it be couched and so balanced?
He doesn't want to look like his schedule is hijacked by events. And he, you know, the idea of suddenly whipsawing your schedule and rushing back to Washington, especially in a crisis where you have limited amounts of options anyway, they feel the White House looks reactive, looks somehow less than decisive.
Speaking as the White House mouthpiece, Peter Baker, he went on to say, however, on the other hand, you could look disengaged as well. But my goodness, did George Bush on Katrina get this type of a pass from the New York Times? I mean, it takes the New York Times this long? We were writing about this 4 years ago in the Obama diaries. This type of celebu-central White House. This is, I mean, let me tell you something. If Jay-Z and Beyonce, they needed to get in touch with the president on Friday, they could have gotten in touch with the president on Friday. He would have cleared his schedule for George Clooney. All right, you hear Adam Levine got married over the weekend? Well, Michelle, you make sure you send something from the registry. What do they need? Let's get it done. Married that cute supermodel, I heard.
It's like, hallelujah.
But that's all right, because when we come back, we will remind you that he did send his best man to get on this mission real fast, straight from Nantucket to the morning shows on Sunday. We will share with you how John Kerry tried to explain all this away and make you think that the United States was front and center, basically running the diplomatic show in all of these crises. When we come back, we'll get to that. All your phone calls, 855-40-LAURA, and the propaganda machine is humming today, trying to get you to believe the border crisis is lessening. I have so much information. I'm bottled up after all these 4 days off the air. I'm bottled up, but I'm going to get it all out to you. We have a great lineup. Jennifer Griffin is going to give us the latest from Fox News on this international crisis. Given the plane and what Putin has done, they were descending upon that wreckage like vultures, trying to get those black boxes out of there, trying to get the bodies out of there, stacking them up on the trains. We have unbelievable audio from one of the rebel units right on the scene. BBC posted it last night. It's unbelievable. You probably haven't heard it. We're going to play it for you. So she'll join us. We'll play that audio a lot more. 855-40-LAURA. And if you think this border crisis is over, think again. I'll tell you why. You keep running for another place
to find that saving grace. Basically, if there's a bowl of good chips and guacamole.
I lose
my mind.
You know that this is real. This isn't a joke.
Wow. That's big.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
The facts could not be more clear. The United States of America has never been more engaged in helping to lead in more places than we are now.
He seemed to be losing face literally and figuratively on Fox News Sunday. Well, his face seems like it's melting away. Right? It's just, well, he is the original Lumiere, John Kerry. Like, see, I got word on Friday, which I tweeted out. So if you follow me on my vacation, then you knew that my sources had told me, and I wasn't in Nantucket, but my sources had told me that John Kerry was at some, I don't know, I got to look it up what name it was, Lolo in Nantucket on Friday night. Now, they were there, my friends were there, and they saw him. And again, it's not a big, you wouldn't change your plans, right? Because we got this major incursion by Israel into Gaza and we got this plane shot down. You wouldn't change your plans for that, would you? No, of course not. What did he say? He said the United States has never what involved? What did he say?
The United States of America has never been more engaged.
Since when has bean been? Bean more involved. Well, maybe that's what he meant. We're more, it's a vegetable reference. We've never been more involved, Raymond Arroyo.
That's its region. Maybe it's a regionalism. We're recalling Boston beans.
Oh, good. Boston beans. Exactly. Okay.
That is the Boston
right.
bean, perhaps.
Okay.
The same one used by John Adams.
Oh, exactly. Okay, so that's maybe what the situation was.
Never has the Republic been.
Bean more involved.
Overrun with such.
Can do face. Well, so he said we've never been more involved. And he said the region's basically calmer, right?
One thing I've seen for certain, people aren't worried around the United States and sitting there saying we want the United States to leave. People are worried that the United States might leave.
Might leave or lead? He said, let's keep listening to him on Fox News Sunday, please. I want to understand what he's saying here.
The American people ought to be proud of what this president has done in terms of peaceful, diplomatic engagement rather than quick trigger, deploying troops, starting or engaging in a war of choice. I think the president's on the right track, and I think we have the facts to prove it.
Facts to prove it? Is that...
What is he talking about?
Straight from the sands of Nantucket.
Yeah, this is the Clouseau of foreign policy.
No, they're just looking for something. No, but the best was when Chris Wallace slammed him because he was caught on it with an open microphone talking about Israel's reaction. And again, he's been in foreign policy and in politics for decades, and he doesn't, you know, I guess he just forgot about the open mic. I mean, it can happen to the best of us.
Yeah. It's a hell of a pinpoint operation. It's a hell of a pinpoint operation.
It's escalating significantly, and it just underscores the need for ceasefire.
We've got to get over there. Thank you, John. I think, John, we ought to go tonight. I think it's crazy to be sitting around.
I thought, is this John, some producer at MSNBC? I mean, what is that? John, straight from the... John, let those guys at the Daily Coast give them my best. Tell all my friends at Salon, John, that I said hi. John, give the Huffington Post my best. I thought it might have been a reporter from one of
them. No, it's a staffer.
No, it's obviously some kind of staffer.
And now he's on his way to stop the bloodshed in the Middle East. How do you do that as an honest broker when you're already criticizing one side's so-called pinpoint operation? You're ridiculing their pinpoint operation.
Of course, Chris Wallace is on this like 7 on 8.
Iran is going to get $2.8 billion more in assets that we have frozen. Instead of sanctions, even though there's no deal, and they continue to their research and their enrichment.
Actually, Chris, they're reducing their enrichment, and the fact is that this is the first time in 10 years under this current deal that Iran's nuclear program is being rolled back. They have not been able to move forward on the Iraq plutonium heavy water reactor.
But sir, they can continue.
Chris, you like to ask questions, but you don't like to get answers.
They are able to continue work on their centrifuge.
Chris, I don't care how many questions you ask, I'm going to finish my answer. And I think what we're doing by holding their nuclear program at a lower level, we've expanded the breakout time. The world is safer, and this is a smart deal.
Finally, sir, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to answer the question there. The limits on time have been put on by your people. We'd talk to you all day, sir.
That was the back and forth on Iran. When we come back, we will talk to you about the ongoing crisis in Gaza. Chris Wallace was fabulous on Iran, but Chris Wallace, or one of the Sunday shows, asked him about the open mic comment, and we will play it for you. A little detour there. We'll play it for you when we come back. Jennifer Griffin will join us. We have a lot more coming up on your healthy radio addiction.
It's a hell of a pinpoint operation. It's a hell of a pinpoint operation.
It's escalating significantly, and it just underscores the need for ceasefire.
We've got to get over there. I think, John, we ought to go tonight. I think it's crazy to be sitting around.
Secretary Kerry, when you said it's a hell of a pinpoint operation, are you upset that the Israelis are going too far? And, in fact, do you intend to go back to the Middle East tonight, sir?
I think it's very, very difficult in these situations. Obviously very difficult, Chris. You have people who've come out of tunnels. You have a right to go in and take out those tunnels. We completely support that. And we support Israel's right to defend itself against rockets that are...
Okay, he's completely caught. He was caught in an open mic situation. And was the open mic on Fox, or where was it? What it was on actually Fox News.
Yep. Jeez.
So he's caught with the open mic, and he comes back. Oh, no, we support Israel's one. Why did you say it's a hell of a pinpoint operation? Why are you saying it's a hell of a... That was obviously... He was criticizing Israel. As if we didn't need any more problems on the diplomatic front. Now, Bibi Netanyahu knows, if he didn't already know before, that the administration is being hypercritical. Obviously, terrible situation in Gaza, and we have 13 Israeli soldiers killed yesterday. We have a lot of collateral damage inside of Gaza, and the international media is going to always be against Israel. I mean, they're just going to reflexively blame Israel for all of this, despite the fact that we know Gaza has been receiving its Qassam rocket components through these tunnels. Other support for violence through these tunnels for years, and Israel tries to come in with a limited operation, but things are always going to happen when you go in and militarily across another territory's border. You know, I keep going back and saying they should never have given up Gaza. That was a mistake. You just created a staging ground for terrorism. Joining us now with the latest on this is Jennifer Griffin, one of the greatest reporters out there on foreign policy and military affairs. She's Fox News' national security correspondent now since 2007. Jennifer, it is great to talk to you. That was quite a moment on Fox News Sunday. And John Kerry, I think, had to kind of backpedal a little bit. But undoubtedly, this administration is not happy with Israel.
Well, what's interesting, Laura, and we've seen this so many times in the past. First of all, you mentioned the Qassam rockets that are fired from the Gaza Strip. And it's not just the Qassam rockets. Those are the short-range rockets. What you had today is a rocket that hit Tel Aviv. It's the first time a rocket has had that kind of distance. And what I've heard from Western intelligence sources is what they're finding in terms of the Iranian rockets that can basically blanket all of Israel from Gaza. These underground tunnels, it used to be when I was based in Israel and covered the Gaza Strip, you had tunnels going from Egypt, the Sinai side of the border, into southern Gaza, where they were originally started to bring in cigarettes, and it was a kind of a smuggling route,
right,
and they were bringing in weapons there. But now you have tunnels that go into Israel itself and vast tunnel networks that are very professionally made underneath Gaza City. And that's what has the attention of not just Israel, but also its partners. And the U.S. is very concerned about that. What was surprising to me was how out of step it sounded like Secretary of State Kerry was to people in our intelligence community who I've been speaking to, who paint a very different picture about how concerned U.S. intelligence is about the developments in the Gaza Strip.
So the Qassam rockets are to the shorter range.
Those are homemade.
Yeah, they're deadly. They can be deadly. They hit into Sderot in that area. I mean, I saw them all lined up in Sderot when I was there in 2007.
Not to downplay those. It's just that the ones that really have everyone's attention now and the developments and the reason that Israel felt they needed to go in now is that they have evidence of rockets that can hit all parts of Israel, and that is untenable.
Which, of course, changes the entire equation, because if they don't take these tunnels out now and stop their technological capability in launching these more sophisticated weapon systems, then who knows what will happen in 6 months.
Look at what happened when I was in Israel when Israel pulled out of Lebanon after 20 years. And, you know, everyone was cheering that that was a great moment, and certainly Israel didn't want to be in southern Lebanon. But after 2000, between 2000 and 2006, Hezbollah to the north in Lebanon, with Iranian backing, put more than 6,000 missiles, long-range or medium-range missiles, up into, and then Israel had to go in and fight a full war the summer of 2006 for 34 days to stop those missiles. So you either do it now or you do it later, and it gets more and more complicated as time goes on.
The president has been accused of being disengaged. I mean, he had this kids' state dinner on Friday that I guess was previously planned, and they were kind of yucking it up there. I mean, it was for the kids, so I guess you say, well, what are you going to do, cancel that? But, I mean, even the New York Times, finally, they wrote a piece about whether this is all looking a bit odd, not just with, you know, refusing to change schedules, and now the president has at least three fundraisers scheduled for this week, which the White House claims they're not going to change because it would unduly alarm Americans to have the president whipsaw his schedule, as Peter Baker referred to it as today on MSNBC. It would be like whipsawing his schedule. What's the sense there? I mean, you've covered Bush and you covered Obama now, and look, Bush kept exercising, right? And he kept doing some recreation during crises and so
forth.
I mean, so is this fair or unfair?
Well, you know, what I think was not fair on Friday, when there was a lot made out of how Samantha Power, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., had made a very powerful speech at the U.N. outlining all the evidence in terms of the Ukraine, the downing of the Malaysian plane, linking it back to Russia, Russia's support for the separatists. She really made a very legal case, if you will.
So she was good.
And she was strong. And people were like, whoa, why is the UN ambassador stronger than what we're hearing from the White House? I think the way to understand that, and I don't think it's any different from any previous administration, is they're leaving the president options. From what I'm hearing from very well-placed intelligence officials is that they have basically all the evidence they need to pinpoint this on Russia. The question now is, it's a high-stake game of political chess, diplomacy, to use this. They're not going to be able to bring that plane back, so you might as well use it in negotiations over Iran, in the situation in Syria. You've got your thumb on Russia right now. Now, how are you going to use it politically? And so that's why you may be seeing the president being more circumspect. But I would agree with you that the optics in terms of him going to fundraisers and it is inexplicable that those kind of things can't be shifted. You can still say that the president's at Camp David, and that sends a signal. And I believe he was at Camp David this weekend. But this notion that you don't change schedules, you know, we remember how silly it looked when everyone made a big deal about the President Bush sitting for 2 seconds extra long when, after 9/11 happened, when they were trying to figure out what was going on, and everyone honed in on that. Why? They've been through enough of these crises now. They should have learned back in the Benghazi timeframe, you don't go off to a fundraiser after something like this.
Good point. September 11th, September 12th, 2012, and the president went off to Las Vegas, and he made very brief remarks about the death of the ambassador, but then he went on to do a rally. And, I think it isn't fair to say the president shouldn't be able to do anything but governing. No, I don't think that's fair, and I don't say that. And they should be able to take a break here and there, and, you know, look, they need to recharge and so forth. But I think there have been so many images of the president doing kind of more frivolous things when you had multiple crises at one time. It's not just like you have one thing happening, the border crisis in the Southwest. You have the states going nuts because we have these thousands of kids descending on the states, and they're like, how are we going to deal with our funds are already limited? Then you get the Middle East, then you get the jetliner. You know, and my friends were in Nantucket on Friday night. John Kerry was at some Lolo club or Lolo restaurant in Nantucket on Friday night. That's weird.
And also, why is he caught in an open mic moment talking about how they got to get to the Middle East, they've got to deal with the Israeli-Palestinian issue, when diplomacy right now should be, he should be heading to Europe and rallying those leaders to finally bring some sanctions against Putin. That's where you have some influence right now, because you have a moment where the whole world is outraged by this Malaysia plane. This is your time to go to Europe. Why are you heading to, the Israel-Palestinian thing will play itself out.
Right.
There's, it seems like it's personal between him and Netanyahu at this point.
Yeah, no, they don't like each other. Remember that time he made Netanyahu jump over the trash to get into the White House? Remember those big hefty bags? Netanyahu to navigate. It's like, meanwhile, it's like, Beyonce, all right, come on. Netanyahu was like doing a pole vault to get into the side entrance of the old West Wing. This is Richard Haass today talking about whether this is a moment for Europe to, quote, step up.
Are your European leaders ready to step up, especially European leaders who've been really silent throughout this entire problem with Russia and the Ukraine?
Well, yeah, that's quite honestly the big question. The French in particular have been holding back. If that is right now the critical question. Can we get them to put pressure on Putin? If so, the odds for diplomacy go up dramatically.
Well, here's my point there. That's John Heilman and Richard Haass from MSNBC. Here's my question. I have friends in Europe who work for various security organizations, and they laugh when they hear this, that Europe is going to step up, Jennifer, and I'll tell you why. The Nord Stream and South Stream pipelines that have, of course, gotten their approval in bringing critical energy supplies into Eastern Europe and through into Western Europe, that was negotiated and pushed through, these multi-billion-dollar endeavors, with the support and help of all of these former EU politicians, such as Gerhard Schroeder, who still has an enormous amount of influence in the region. Obviously, Germany is a critical element here, given it's the strongest economy right now in Western Europe. Yet my sources tell me that these former government officials are so in bed with the Russians because they've been paid handsomely to be on these, sit on these boards, and this thing is a done deal. If people are going to hold their breath waiting for Europe to step up, they're going to wait for a long time because Europe is not – I don't believe they're going to touch this with anything substantive. You can react.
I agree. Don't forget, after Russia invaded Crimea, Gerhard Schroeder was in either Moscow or St. Petersburg where Putin was hosting a birthday party for him. Now, he's no longer the German chancellor, but good grief. What are the optics there? I mean, it is.
He doesn't care. He probably has $200 million in the bank as a result.
Well, and so you're right that we shouldn't hold our breath, but that's where the diplomacy should be. That's where we should be saying, look, this was a massacre of your citizens. What are you going to do about it? And if you're not going to do something about it, this whole NATO thing is a charade. And if you don't invest in your defense, you want us to defend you, and we spend a lot of money on NATO, what good is it doing?
You know, this is why a lot of Americans are saying, you know, time to pull out of Germany. I mean, if they're not, again, it's like with Iraq. If the Iraqis are going to drop their weapons, take off their uniforms and run, you know, we're back in Iraq now and with our advisors. I'm just saying that what I find when I go across the country, people are like, well, look, we're fine to help people when we can help people and do what we can, but my goodness. I mean, if no one else is going to build their military reserves and actually counter real, verifiable aggression, then America can't keep picking up the tab for all this. I mean, I'm just saying that's what the way people are seeing this. And I can't blame them, even though, of course, I want America to be, you know, forward leading on all of this.
Yeah. No, it's a very sorry state of affairs right now. But again, this is a time for our Secretary of State to be in Europe working with them and saying, okay, now it's time to pressure Putin. I mean, the fact that Putin is still given invitations to places, and I mean, this is a moment. And if we let him just get away with this downing of the plane, I mean, the evidence. I just want to make one more point, Laura. These are not separatists.
Thank you.
This is
Russia.
Russian invasion. The guy that we have a picture of, that U.S. intelligence has social media postings of him claiming to have brought down the Malaysia plane, not realizing necessarily that it was a civilian plane, is Igor Strelkov. He was in the KGB, the FSB, for 18 years. He's a former military intelligence officer for Russia. He is Russian. He's not Ukrainian, and he's leading the separatist, so-called separatist movement in Ukraine. We have to get away from this notion of it's not a civil war. This is a artificial creation and invasion by Moscow, and Moscow brought down that plane.
Well, and I think, you know, you were out there many, many weeks ago saying that the language here is wrong. You know, calling rebels. I mean, you hear rebels, you think these are indigenous people. We and you and Fox.
These are agents provocateurs
sent
by Moscow.
They were coming, streaming across the border in trucks, in dropped in planes, in cars, and they were infiltrating the cities of the Ukraine for one purpose: to subvert the Ukrainian government, Ukrainian authorities, and they were to cause all sorts of trouble, and then they would be referred to by all these dupes in the international media as rebels and separatists when they were Moscow stooges. This is how it's been. You know, anyone who's followed Russia or knows Russia knows this, and it's the language has to be changed. I completely agree with you.
Absolutely.
Jennifer, thank you for your reporting on this. These are dangerous times, and foreign policy matters. We have to have leadership, and we have to certainly hope that the Obama administration steps up where it can step up and actually exert the correct diplomatic pressure where it can.